理课堂听 class.com。
Model Test 16. Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once.After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11.Bob, shall I cut your hair for you?
You must be kidding. Last time you almost made me bald.
What does the man imply? Question 12. I found a perfect book bag.But I'm about $20 short.
Don't look at me. I don't get paid for another week.
What does the man imply? Question 13. Tony said he could lend me some money to buy the house.
Tony always means what he says.
What does the man mean? Question 14. Not getting that job was a big letdown.
Don't worry, something better will come along.
What do we learn from this conversation?
Question 15. Joan, why were you late for class this morning?
I overslept and missed the bus. I'm really sorry, and I promise I won't be late again.
Why was Joan late?
Question 16. Should we call Marcia and tell her about the meeting?
I'm not sure. It's up to you. Maybe you need some time to have a good consideration.
What does the man imply? Question 17. I hope you have a good flight.
The weather is supposed to be clear all down the coast, so it should be pretty smooth.
Where does this conversation probably take place? Question 18. Aren't you ready? The Browns' lunch is for 1 o'clock. We'd better leave right away or we'll arrive late.They'll think we have bad manners.
It isn't bad manners to be late. In France, everybody is late.
What does the man mean? Now you'll hear two long conversations. Conversation 1.
A friend of mine will be arriving from China in a month.
That's great! How long will he stay here?
He's coming on a business visa that is only good for 2 weeks.
That's not very long. Will he be busy doing his business all the time he's here?
No, his business affair will only take about a week. He should be able to see some of the country's scenery while he's here.
Does he speak any English?
No, that is the problem. He was going to bring an interpreter with him, but he was not able to get a visa for him.
Will you be able to interpret for him? You do speak some Chinese, don't you?
I can only speak a very few words. I did learn some Chinese, but I'm afraid my vocabulary doesn't go much beyond greetings and a few words for shopping.
I know you would be able to show him around the country, but you wouldn't be able to give him information about the different places of interest. Could I be of any help to you?
That is very kind of you to offer. I was hoping that you would have some time to spend with us. Are you very busy with your work right now?
I do have a few days that are free, and I'd be happy to help you out. And I can learn more Chinese simultaneously. Is your friend someone I would know?
I don't believe so, but I know you'll like him. He's a very nice person.
That's good.
I don't know the exact time when we'll need your help. Could I give you a call in a week to let you know?
That would be just fine. I'll look forward to your phone call.
You don't know how much I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. I'm happy that my schedule allows me to help.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. How long will the business affair of the man's friend last? Question 20. Why couldn't the man's friend take an interpreter with him? Question 21. Which of the following words can best describe the woman? Conversation 2.
I haven't seen Mike for years. How's he getting along?
I came across him on the street yesterday, and he told me that he was having trouble with his new business.
He has set up another business. I knew nothing about it.
He managed a shop last year selling sport clothes, but it soon went bankrupt, so he changed his mind.
What is he doing now?
He is managing a bar, and this is also in a pretty bad state.
Sorry to hear that, but that should be what he's good at.
Yes, but he was fined and threatened to close the bar.
What went wrong?
He's only licensed to sell beer, but he sold hard drinks.
He should have minded his steps, but that shouldn't be the reason.
Well, he has had several other setbacks, too.
Misfortunes never come alone. What setbacks?
The people around him did not support him. Some even tried to preach down him.
They're jealous, aren't they?
Worse than that. Some people even tried to encourage him against his wife, because she wants him to give up the business.
I can't believe that.
And Mike was in a ruined mood.
Let's go and have a good talk with Mike's wife. We need to persuade her to support him.
You've taken the words out of my mouth.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 22. Where did the man meet Mike yesterday? Question 23. What do we learn about Mike's shop? Question 24. Why was Mike threatened to close his bar? Question 25. What does the woman suggest the man do?
Section B. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. We have tended to view yoga as a kind of foreign religious exercise. But in fact, from a medical standpoint, the age-old set of exercises known in the West as yoga offers a significant variety of health benefits. It increases the efficiency of the heart and slows the respiratory rate, improves fitness, lowers blood pressure, promotes relaxation, reduces stress, and allays anxiety. It is not, in itself, a cure for any medical ailment. A typical session includes three disciplines: breathing exercises, body postures, and meditation. You may also be given advice on nutrition and lifestyle. Each session usually begins with a set of gentle warming-up exercises. The teacher will then ask you to focus on your breathing and may take you through several breathing exercises. At the very last, you will be asked to breathe through your nose, evenly through both nostrils. Then it's on to the yoga postures, a series of poses that typically must be held for periods of a few seconds or several minutes. As you assume the various postures, you will be asked to move gently, without jerking or bouncing. Breathing techniques remain important. You will need to focus on exhaling during certain movements and inhaling during others. Likewise, as you hold certain postures, you may be instructed to inhale through one nostril and exhale through the other. You will be allowed to rest after every three or four postures, and at the conclusion of the exercises, there is usually a period of rest or meditation.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. What is the main topic of the passage? Question 27. Which of the following are the main yoga steps that need special attention? Question 28. What would a person typically do at the end of yoga exercise? Passage 2. 100 years ago, people were in the habit of making their own amusements. Many people, especially ladies, kept diaries and gentlemen went riding or shooting. At that time, conversation was an art. Amusing conversation could keep people happy for hours. As for games such as football and cricket, people were in the habit of playing them themselves. Most of them did not play very well, but they managed to amuse themselves and their friends. Nowadays, we are amused by professional performances. Why do you listen to your friends singing when you can hear the great singers of the world on the radio? Why do you read a story if you can see one at the cinema? And why do you play football with players who are not very good when you can watch TV and see some of the best players playing an important match without the trouble of going outside? People are becoming more and more lookers and listeners, and less doers and talkers. This can only harm the individual. It is better to do something not very well oneself than always to sit and watch others doing it, however perfectly.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. How did gentlemen amuse themselves in the past? Question 30. Which of the following is true according to the passage? Question 31. What are people's characteristic features when they are amused nowadays? Passage 3. The tomato is the world's most popular fruit, and yes, just like the pumpkin, botanically speaking, it is a fruit, not a vegetable. More than 60 million tons of tomatoes are produced per year, 16 million tons more than the second most popular fruit, the banana. Apples are the third most popular, then oranges and watermelons. Tomatoes were first cultivated in 700 AD by Aztecs and Incas. Explorers returning from Mexico introduced the tomato into Europe, where it was first mentioned in 1556. The French call it the apple of love, the Germans the apple of paradise. Tomatoes are rich in vitamins A and C and fiber. An average-sized tomato, 148 grams or 5 ounces, boasts only 35 calories. Furthermore, new medical research suggests that the consumption of lycopene, the stuff that makes tomatoes red, may prevent cancer. Lycopene is part of the family of pigments, which are natural compounds that create the colors of fruits and vegetables. They are not produced by the human body. Lycopene is the most powerful antioxidant, and with vitamin C and E, protect us from the free radicals that degrade many parts of the body. The scientific term for the common tomato is Lycopersicum, which means wolf peach. It is a cousin of the eggplant, red pepper, ground cherry, potato, and the highly toxic nightshade. There are more than 10,000 varieties of tomatoes. Tomatoes are used in many food products, including, of course, tomato sauce or ketchup, pasta and pizza. According to a Steel Packing Council survey of 1997, 68% of chefs use canned tomatoes for convenience, quality and flavoring.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 32. How does tomato rank in production among all the fruits in the world? Question 33. Which is the third popular fruit according to the passage? Question 34. What did the French call the tomato? Question 35. What does the word lycopersicon mean according to the passage?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
A great deal of the early part of humanity's long struggle to measure time amounted to trying to decide what exactly it was that should be measured. The basic unit of time was the day, from sunrise to sunset. The Egyptians were the first to break the day into 12 equal parts, giving us the forerunner of today's hours. It was into that world of natural time, based on the sun's march across the sky and varying with the seasons, that the first mechanical timepieces were introduced in 13th century Europe. At odds with the conception of time as something that flows, with the introduction of the first clocks came the idea of measuring time by splitting it into distinct pieces and counting them. That the early clocks were highly unreliable. However, this was of little consequence because they could be checked and adjusted regularly by reference to the sun. So despite the technology, time still depended on the sun and still changed from season to season. The time given by a knee-jerk device was not considered to be the real time and had to be indicated as such by means of the phrase of the clock, later abbreviated to o'clock. Underlying the development of ever more accurate clocks came a new conception of time as something that flows of its own accord in a uniform fashion, independent of the rotation of the earth or its motion around the sun. In fact, the thing we are measuring is created by the devices that do the measurement.
Now the passage will be read again. A great deal of the early part of humanity's long struggle to measure time amounted to trying to decide what exactly it was that should be measured. The basic unit of time was the day, from sunrise to sunset. The Egyptians were the first to break the day into 12 equal parts, giving us the forerunner of today's hours. It was into that world of natural time, based on the sun's march across the sky and varying with the seasons, that the first mechanical timepieces were introduced in 13th century Europe. At odds with the conception of time as something that flows, with the introduction of the first clocks came the idea of measuring time by splitting it into distinct pieces and counting them. That the early clocks were highly unreliable. However, this was of little consequence because they could be checked and adjusted regularly by reference to the sun. So, despite the technology, time still depended on the sun and still changed from season to season. The time given by a knee-jerk device was not considered to be the real time and had to be indicated as such by means of the phrase of the clock, later abbreviated to o'clock. Underlying the development of ever more accurate clocks came a new conception of time. As something that flows of its own accord, in a uniform fashion, independent of the rotation of the Earth or its motion around the Sun. In fact, the thing we are measuring is created by the devices that do the measurement.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. A great deal of the early part of humanity's long struggle to measure time amounted to trying to decide what exactly it was that should be measured. The basic unit of time was the day, from sunrise to sunset. The Egyptians were the first to break the day into 12 equal parts, giving us the forerunner of today's hours. It was into that world of natural time, based on the sun's march across the sky and varying with the seasons, that the first mechanical timepieces were introduced in 13th century Europe. At odds with the conception of time as something that flows, with the introduction of the first clocks came the idea of measuring time by splitting it into distinct pieces and counting them. That the early clocks were highly unreliable, however, this was of little consequence because they could be checked and adjusted regularly by reference to the sun. So despite the technology, time still depended on the sun and still changed from season to season. The time given by a knee-jerk device was not considered to be the real time and had to be indicated as such by means of the phrase of the clock, later abbreviated to o'clock. Underlying the development of ever more accurate clocks came a new conception of time as something that flows of its own accord, in a uniform fashion, independent of the rotation of the Earth or its motion around the Sun. In fact, the thing we are measuring is created by the devices that do the measurement. ¶¶